Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak. I'm your host Dave.
And Ben, I mean John.
Yes, Ben is off this week, but in his place we have two very special guests with us. They're actually repeat guests. Both of these gentlemen have been on the show individually, and in both of those interviews they talked about a project they're working on together. So they've come back on together to talk about their new book, Blue Nemesis. So everyone, please welcome Steve Scott and James Maddox.
How's it going, everybody?
Going good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
How's the weather for you guys?
Well, I missed the bulk of it, so. But right now it's not too bad actually. I just walked to a restaurant for dinner with a friend, so it was warm enough to walk in.
Yes, it was 40 today here in Philly.
Wow. All of you are going to be sick when I mean I'm on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Mm-hmm. It's 60. It's been 64 degrees. Like right now it's 64. The high today was about 70 degrees. Sort of like that perfect weather. Only it was foggy. I don't want you guys to think about sunshine.
Yeah.
Not a lot of sunshine, but it was a little foggy. But it felt good.
Yes. I've always been a big Star Wars fan, but I've never wanted to live on Hoth. But now I know what it feels like.
Yeah, never. I'm on Tatooine over here, pretty much. Except for it's a high humidity, you know, right there at the Gulf of Mexico. So, you know, yeah. I have that density of the air. So, yeah, so.
So what have you guys been up to since we've last talked? I've heard talk of this book, Blue Nemesis.
James needs to start. Number one, he started off the project, but also James has been up to some amazing stuff, even inside and outside of Blue Nemesis. James, take it away.
Oh, we've been just what's the word? Trudging away. it seems like we got like so many people started getting interested in Blue Nemesis, and that led to so many other different things that, you know, we've kind of had to step away, but we're looking forward to stepping back into it very, very soon. We've been talking about doing the Kickstarter, you know, release that will be happening after Mr. Popular gets back from his European tour.
Nice.
Well, you know, pretty much what's been happening and what James is kind of talking about, you know, we began the entire project with intention for it to be as a 50-page graphic novel in the same vein and the same feel of a European hardcover edition graphic novel. I mean, the first time he and I even talked about this, even before it before I got the first script, you know, we talked about that format. Well, what happened was, you know, it pretty much grew to the point, you know, we started showing it to different publishers. James did.
Yeah.
And some very big publishers took a liking to it to the point of wanting to pitch it. And with that being said, mm-hmm. had it been done through those publishers, we would have had to alter the format that we were going with. So we put it on hiatus because of that. Now, yeah. I say personally, fortunately, it's back to the original plan.
Yeah, I'm actually very satisfied that, I mean, it would have gone through really, really drastic changes, and it would have gone to be like this kind of elongated, you know, idea of what we had first talked about doing. But the fact that we're keeping it kind of, you know, like this small self-contained idea, it actually makes me a lot happier, just because it's such a, I hate saying it like this because I sound like a jerk, but it is, it's my favorite story, you know, that I think I've come up with. And the fact that we're doing it the way that we originally sent it out, you know, or set it up for, is making me really excited to jump back in.
Now, is this something that you find that a problem that you have a lot in this field, where you have an idea, you try to shop it around, and you required changes of it in order to get it published?
Well, you know, as far as doing, how can I say this without, you know, kind of going off on a tangent? Basically, you have an idea, and your idea is set in your head. And when you give it to, or when you find the right editor or the right artist or somebody to collaborate with your idea, it's obviously going to go through some changes, because now you have two people that have an idea of what this thing should be. Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of, you know, if we were to do it through a small press or an independent publisher, it would stay truer to what your original thought process would be. But once you start going through to major publishers, they want to put out a good story, obviously, but they also know that it needs to make money. And in order for it to make money, you know, certain things need to be changed up based on what they think. If they're going to foot the bill, it's going to need to go through a few of their filters, you know? So there is always going to be change when you're playing on that level of the game. Sometimes it's good, it's bad.
I've got to interject and only say that I think James completely nailed this story from the get-go perfectly. And so I don't think that the changes needed to be, but also I have been, and James is a consummate professional as well, but I've been in this business for a long time. So I understand that if the people fitting the bill and the publisher decides they want to make change, you know, you let them do that. You let them go that route and suggest that, and you follow through, because it's part of – you know, I mean, even when with movies and television and everything else, you know, I mean, there is a team effort, and typically the people fitting the bill, the producers, are the final say in what's going to be done, one way or the other. They really are. But at this point in time, with what we've got going on, James and I, we're back to being completely in control. I love what James did. I've really not altered anything, I don't believe, James, that you've done, because I mean, down to how he's ended the page. There's been certain pages that had a high panel count, and he even said, you know, hey, Steve, you know, in the script, do what you want. If you want to break this up, do it. Do this. But he did a very good job of really setting the pace and the beat of this story. And it's really phenomenal, just as it is, in my opinion. And so now we actually have that creative freedom and control, you know, to and again, look, I'm on a tangent here, but our intent is to get it out to as many people as we possibly can.
Right.
And the two potential publishers that had us on hold temporarily while they were considering it, and they were very much considering it, were two major players. You know, and matter of fact, you know, and both of them I have worked for. One of them just recently. And so it was worth the consideration, worth the time, and it's not from the lack of their. But the reason why they actually considered it is because it's so amazingly done. James did a wonderful job on writing the concept of this. He wrote the story so beautifully well, and that is the reason why it was sitting there for consideration. And it's different little factors made it to where it's back in our hands, and I'm happy.
Yeah.
I mean, having read the preview, first off, it's brilliant. Both from a writing and an art standpoint. And I'm kind of glad to hear that you two are in control, because I have to imagine that was the original concept, and I wouldn't want to see that changed. You know, it's really well done. Now I feel like I have to say something here, because people who listen to this show know that I get down on dark comics, you know, comic books with a dark storyline, but I'm not down on dark comics. I'm down on when people take Superman and try to make him a dark character, or when they try to take, you know, somebody who's been classically the main good guy and humanize him to the point where he's breaking necks. Okay. But I love The Watchmen. I love The Killing Joke. I love stuff like that. So I will say that I love Blue Nemesis. It's an amazing story. And I find feels like there's an homage to almost classic sci-fi in a way.
And oh, yeah.
I was going to ask, was that an influence in there?
Well, yeah. I mean, as far as, like, the writing standpoint goes, like, I definitely wanted that feel to it, but Steve is really the guy that made it actually happen and come off as far as the visual appeal of it was spot on. I cannot praise him enough for being so spot on. I like writing what I read, and the classic sci-fi stuff is definitely what I like to read.
But Dave's right. It does kind of track like an original Twilight Zone episode. It's got that kind of depth to it. I like it, you know?
Well, John, it's so funny. I mean, you know, when James and I were talking about what we really like, you know, we were talking about, like, you know, what the subject matter would be on a story that we collaborate on. You know, we mentioned that. You know, we talked about Twilight Zone. We talked about, you know, that kind of concept of science fiction. And man, I tell you what, James, you know, thank you for what you said about me. But I mean, truthfully, man, I'm inspired by what I had in front of me. This is the best of the kind of science fiction that I like to read because it really deals with the people. It deals with the psychology. It deals with the idea of seclusion. It deals with the mental things that people would deal with. I mean, again, very Twilight Zone. And the preview that you guys have actually read, that you guys have seen, does not even yet get into the action yet. The stuff that would be on the big screen that they would say, oh, this is the killer scenes that we want to put in the trailer. Mm. You guys have still not even gotten to that point yet. James, the stuff that he's written is fantastic dealing with that, and I can't wait to get to that portion too. I already did a lot of design work for that, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and the storyline as it stands, I mean, I think that might have been where a lot of the both the excitement and the hesitation came from publishers, was they saw it as this kind of story that dealt with characters who couldn't die, and that's, you know, in a long-running story, like, you know, they were thinking about, yes, that might be kind of difficult to pull off on a grand scale. But what we've got, and what I really wanted everybody to understand, was that you're not, you know, life and death is easy. You know, doing a story that just predominantly deals with these consequences that we've gotten used to is easy. What happens when that end that everybody knows about and everybody relies on isn't there anymore? I mean, we're talking about a whole new way of conceiving stakes and risks and consequences of actions. You don't get to make a mistake and then that mistake kills you. You get to make a mistake and you have to live with that mistake, you know? So it's just, I don't know. I like the way of telling this particular story.
Right. We've even gotten to a point where in horror movies, you know, that sometimes it's played upon that the vampires who live forever want to get that release of finally dying. You know, we've reached a point where in our pop culture, you know, people are aware of the fact that, you know, sometimes life is not so wonderful to where you want to keep on going. And yet, can you imagine not having that ability or playing with the idea of how will that happen? Well, these people, as we've already, you know, if there was a movie trailer for Blue Nemesis, it would immediately say, wow, we can't die. You know, that would be immediately said. So I'm right. Not actually giving up, you know, this is not a big spoiler. This would be in a trailer. Now, what do we do about it? You know, and man, I tell you what, you know, James plays with each of the characters. I care about each of the characters, even the ones you don't want to like. I actually used myself as sort of like the reference point of the guy who's like the character you first learn to not like. You know, I was like, oh man, his description of him, he looks like me. Okay, he's gonna be me. So, but I mean,
I got that page. You know, that was the funniest thing ever, man.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, that's what I love. You know, when I got into comics, it was originally for, you know, I love science fiction. I loved reading science fiction and fantasy and horror, and it's got all the elements of all of that I love, all wrapped into one. And there's an energy that James, as a person, actually, you know, puts out there that, you know, when you meet James, you're like, you know what, I want to work on anything James would put out. You know, he's just one of those kind of people. So I mean, it's a collaboration that I had to be a part of, and I'm so pleased to be a part of.
Yeah, I actually have a question. There's, when this does come out, I'm going to assume that people are going to draw. People are going to compare this to like Torchwood Miracle Day. Have you ever seen that or heard of it?
No. Like the Torchwood, the series, you mean?
Yeah, but they had a mini series. It's kind of a mini series called Miracle Day that actually does explore the idea of nobody on the planet being able to die.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Well, it's good that you don't know it, because you know, now we're going to have two viewpoints of it.
Now let me very thirsty and starving to death.
No.
It's just... okay. It's not even close. Not even close.
No, it's the comparisons to other works. You're always going to get that. I mean,
yes.
I know.
That's fine. You know, there's. I mean, hell, if our story is compared to something, you know, put out on that level of a thing, then that's fine. I personally think that what we're going to put out will blow anything out of the water, you know, that's near us. But that's just me being an arrogant jerk, like I said.
I would put it as a cross between Pitch Black, Aliens. Let me see, what else? What other movies would you say, James? Pitch Black and Alien.
Yeah,
Pitch I would Black, say not Aliens, but Alien.
Yeah, Alien definitely. Just because of the closeness and it's got
that sense of confinement.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I'm like I said, I'm sure there are a million different ideas that were hitting me. I'm not one of those writers that likes to. I know a lot of writers, they'll start working on a particular genre of a story and they'll swear off, you know, if they're working on a horror story, they don't watch any horror, you know, they don't read any horror. Me, when I come up against something, I want to know what's out there. So I'll take it all in, you know, and, it helps because it shows you what the trends are, what people are paying attention to, what's striking a chord. It also helps to let you, you know, feed off of that energy and really kind of gather what gets to the heart of telling a science fiction horror story, you know? I love putting little references in to a lot of my stuff. There was a page that, we originally ended the preview on. I don't think it's actually in there now, but it has a lot of text, like newspaper articles and things like that, a journal page, and you get to read what this particular character has been reading and what he's writing and what his pictures are about. And that one page, I sent it to Steve, and I think it was like three or four pages of just like, here's reference and here's stuff, you know?
Dude, so, it was awesome. But see, that was the kind of stuff that I love to digest in a graphic novel. I mean, I'm the kind of person that likes to read books. I mean, you know, my favorite read ever was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes. Very intimate read. Yeah. You know, you feel like you're part of that story. You really feel it's a very intimate experience. When James throws in things like that, you become part of the story, in my opinion, and it becomes more intimate. You become one with the character that you know, that whose desk that was. And why that was all on that desk. And it was the kind of stuff that I would just absorb in a graphic novel. And again, man, James comes through and puts all that in. I didn't ask him to. I got to say, and thank you, James. You know, we think alike on what we like, and thank you.
That's right.
I think number one, one of the things I wanted to say is, one of the things to me that makes good science fiction is that at the core of the story, it's still a very human story.
Yeah.
And that's this, Blue Nemesis definitely has that, you know, obviously with, you know, you guys already explained it, you know, what happens when you can't die. But there's another aspect to this that I really liked, and it's the fact that it is a graphic novel and there are shots, things that you have drawn in here that I don't think would work on a TV series or on a movie. You know, one of the best examples is when the captain has everyone together and she tells them what she's planning to do. And she lists the crew members out, and each there's a quick panel of everyone's reaction to what she's saying, you know, and you really couldn't do like a wide shot on a TV show or quick pan. It's something that really only works in a comic book.
Well, you could sort of do the quick paced beats, like bam, 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 bam. But the point is that, you know, like for me and James working in the medium that we're working in, I don't think about film or TV whenever I'm working in comics. I'm thinking about setting a pattern of beats and a rhythm on the page. And again, I did not have to change anything that James did. Even with some high panel content, it did not really matter because he actually, Had I broken it up just to say, you know what, as an artist, I want to have only four panels on this page. Well, as a storyteller, which is what I am, I'm an illustrator. I'm not an artist. I am a storyteller, illustrator. He did the right beat and rhythm. He ended the page where it should have been ended, and I couldn't change it. I had the opportunity. He offered it to me, but he had already paced it right. But again, it can be put into film, and it is done in sharp cuts and beats. I mean, there's a way that they do this in sharp cuts.
Right.
I had to do it in a pattern along a single line. And I know exactly the scene you're talking about. I had to do it in that into making it a rhythm and a beat, and then getting into the next sequence. And again, we have to work with the medium we're given. You know, if we were doing a video game, we would do it a whole different way. We're doing a comic, and my job and James, his job, and he's done it very well, is to do the best graphic novel, comic, graphic novel, whatever you want to call it, that we possibly can. Because, you know, I want that intimacy. I want, when they read this story, I want them to go, oh, wow. Okay, what's going to happen next? Or, you know, hey, who knows? Maybe everybody dies. We're not going to tell you how it ends. But the point is that I want them to feel something. I want them, and trust me, I've read the story. I know the story inside and out. They are going to feel something when they finish reading this story. It's going to be an intimate experience, and they are going to get something that's a solid bite of just science fiction, just damn good story. It doesn't even have to be science fiction. It's just great story. Great story.
It is. I did have a question too about the fact that it's in black and white. Is that a conscious choice that you guys made together, or?
We went back and forth with deciding whether or not to go full color. We actually had a really excellent colorist do the front cover page.
Mm-hmm.
And he tested out some, I think, two other pages on top of that to show what it would look like in full color. And it does. Right. It looks good. I'm not going to lie. It would do well as a color book. Steve has a color palette in his head for each of the different settings that would make it pop a lot. And however, that being said, as a black and white book, I don't know, there's something about it that makes it a lot more gritty, a lot more dark, a lot more sinister, and a lot more engaging. So we've been happy entertaining both options so far.
No, I definitely agree. And it helps to keep it that feel, like you had said, aliens, you know, that grittiness to aliens, that, you know, the bleakness of it, you know, and it's just, I think it works well in black and white. I don't think I would color it, but that's not my decision at all. I'm just saying.
Well, I would personally love to do a version of this that's done in tones. Okay. I've actually done like a tonal test on it where it's with gray tones, you know, basically. Okay. And also like what James was talking about, color can play such a high degree of psychological storytelling. Okay. Mm-hmm. It can be used and utilized to separate like an area, like when you have an intensity. The very beginning of the story, I really want to be lit in red. I want it to be lit in such a way that's on emergency lighting, but not so much that it's emergency lighting as much as there's red. There's a sense of urgency, intensity, tension. They're feeling it. They're really feeling it. And then outside, there's a different feel. And then later on, there's another atmosphere that comes in that's going to be a different color. And I just want to have it separated in those spaces. But with that being said, the story is so well written. It can be done, in my opinion, in black and white and tones and be just as highly successful. Maybe years down the line or something, it can be done in those colors that I'm talking about, but it doesn't really have to be done to be success. You don't have to rely on that when you've got a really well-written story.
But the colors are like kind of like the background music in a movie. So it sets the tone even without the person reading or watching knowing it.
Right, yeah. So it's one of those things where, you know, we can... Like Steve's saying, this is the cool thing, is that the art's doing... its job, the story's doing its job. You know, if it was a case where the art was really good and the story was just kind of like, eh, whatever, you know, you would definitely need the colors to make it even, you know, cross that line of where it's worth a person's money. But with all those things kind of formulating together, the color would add something. But again, the black and white, you know, seems to be catching people's attention just as much. So it's really like we could just release it both ways, and people would be like, oh, okay, I'm a color fan or I'm a black and white fan.
Yeah,
you could always do a limited run in color.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Yeah.
No, for the price of color, we can do a maximum run in color.
Yeah, right.
Charge extra. Hey, you guys, look. I am a quote unquote illustrator, aka they normally call us an artist. But with that being said, okay, the number one thing in my mind, I've been in this business long enough, is still money. You know, you got to get it to the biggest audience you possibly can, because in all honesty, it takes a long time to produce something like this. I mean, it really does take. It occupies all of your time in your life while you're doing it in a beautiful way, because you know you love what you're doing. But with that being said, you've got to eat. So, you know, you want to make sure that you maximize. If you believe in the project, you should not be just thinking artistically blah. You should be thinking, you know what, I believe in this project enough that I want to get it to as many people as I can. Right. I don't want an audience of 1,000 people to buy this book. No. I want 20,000 on the first print run. You know, yeah. And then I want, you know, it's so on and so forth, because you believe in it, you want that, and actually you thoroughly believe that many people need to be reading this. So, with that being said, yeah, okay, when it goes to color, we want lots of prints. Lots of it done.
And I guess along those lines, you had talked about publishers being interested in it, but you guys are doing it on your own. What's going to be your distribution channels, you know, once this comes out?
Well, the biggest distribution channel that we have at our disposal right now would be like Comixology, I think. Digital distribution is effective as far as getting it out to people, and you know, the social networking of things like Comixology or Drive Through Comics, or you know, Graphically or what have you. But I focus mainly on Comixology. We just released my independent book, The Dead, with Jen Hickman, out on Comixology, and the reaction to it was just, it blew my mind, you know, because we've been doing print books for years at Broken Icon, you know, and it was awesome, because we'd take our books to conventions and they would sell and people would enjoy them and let us know what they thought and all that stuff. But man, we put it up on Comixology and it's like instant gratification. You know, people are talking about it online. People are sharing it to other people. They've got a rating system right now. I think we're at like a 4 out of 5 stars on the first issue that we got up. Like it's all right there, you know? So it's really good. I love, I was hesitant at first to get into the whole digital era, because you know, you love the book. You love the pages and the feel of it and all that. But the digital age is undeniable.
Right. No, that's true. And like you said, the instant feedback and the reviews and not only knowing that it's selling well, but hearing what people have to say about it right away that has to be great.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, given as many people are looking at that for things like you know, Batman and X-Men and Superman, all the things that, you know, the comic industry has a foundation of, that's great. But there's this growing majority of people that want to find good independent comics, and they're all online.
Yeah, that's very true.
Now, with that being said, okay, the key factor that's up to us is to actually be the cream that rises to the top. Because now, when James says that they're all online, there's a bunch of crap online too. I've got to be honest. I mean, if you said digital comics online, okay, it could be little Johnny who's, you know, 18 years old, who thinks he has talent ready right now, which is completely fine. But, you know, you'll find his comic on there, and it's not it's not something that you'd probably want to invest in. You're more like, you know, oh, look, Johnny's come a long way. As his uncle, I think he draws really well. Okay. And he tells a good story, you know, as his aunt, you know, but the point is that, you know, it's our job as the people doing this that now we're not only actually producing this product and thinking that, you know, if you produce it, they will come. But it's our job to actually push it and or what I call pimp it. You know, you have to get it out there to where people can say, you know, look, and I have to say this. I'm not going to disassociate my past credentials from the project because I'd be foolish to do so. But I mean, you know, I've worked on Batman. I've worked on Indiana Jones. You know, George Lucas has overseen my work on Indiana Jones. I've worked. Nolan has overseen my work on the adaptation of Batman Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let people know that in the fact that, look, you know, I'm trusted to do this. You're going to get a quality product. James Maddox is one of the best writers I've ever met and one of the best people I've ever met, but also best writers I've ever met. So, I mean, with that being said, you know, come look at us. You know, this is not little Johnny who's 17 years old. Look at our project.
That's basically where it does come in. We've both kind of talked about that and understand both the good things that come with being digital and the bad things. The good things is that, you know, all the things I mentioned before, the pros. The bad things are all those people that are out there that have free reign to put out, you know, just a bunch of nonsense. Now, that being said, you know, I'm still starting getting some recognition. You know, the horror show has gotten a lot of great publicity and great reviews. It's doing just fine, you know, and The Dead is doing great as well. You guys read Clown and you really liked it. These things are starting to add up for me to show that, yes, I'm an independent creator. I'm not writing Batman and things like that. But I'm putting out quality work. Now, Steve, on the other hand, is like, you know, he's doing things now on an independent level, you know, or an independent side, but that's not his main thrust. You know, I would say your main thrust, Steve, is doing those mainstream awesome works that everybody clamors for. And the fact that, you know, both of our names have certain weights to them, are attached to something that is going to be in that independent comic realm, it will be that cream of the crop.
That's kind of what I'm saying is that in my absolute opinion, you know, you are the top notch writer of this time period right now. In other words, you are the guy that is you're phenomenal. I mean, your writing is really phenomenal. It really is. So yeah, it's something worth taking a look at. It's something worth checking out. And at this point right now, I got the go ahead when I talked to James today that, you know, that we have our original plan and direction is definitely a go and is perfect. When I get back from my Europe tour, I will be firmly working on Blue Nemesis again and getting it all done. And it's going to be fantastic. It just is.
Yeah, that's great. To back up a little bit about the point about the internet, I mean, you're definitely right with the there being so much stuff out there. It's kind of the Wild West, I think, on the internet right now, where, you know, I mean, I look at it in the music scene that you can look on YouTube and find. You can find really good independent bands who are putting stuff together out there. And then you can find, I can't think of her name, Karen Black with their Friday song.
Oh.
Where the song is not good, Rebecca but it Black. Got so many hits. It was a hit, you know. And I think that's another thing. Like some of the really bad stuff people are attracted to because of the whole freak show aspect. And I just hope, you know, because, yes, again, I have to say it's, this is one of the best things I've ever read, and I really do not want it to get buried under the garbage that's out there. You know, I really wish you guys all the success in the world with this because
thank you.
You know, one of the things I wanted to say to you, James, one of the things I really like about your writing, I felt this in Clown and I felt this with Blue Nemesis. You convey a lot of information in the story without being heavy-handed. in what you're conveying in front of us. You know, like some writers, especially if they delve into sci-fi, they have to over-explain everything. They have to push the science behind what's going on to have it make sense. And sometimes it's really hard to read stuff like that. You know, I think, I can't think of the L. Ron Hubbard's sci-fi novel.
What are you talking about? No. Dianetics or...
Not Dianetics. The actual book. They made the movie with Sylvester... Not Sylvester Stallone. With John Travolta.
The one everybody's trying to forget? Yeah.
what is the name of that?
Battlefield Earth.
Battlefield Earth.
Yes.
That book is very heavy-handed. And it's a very hard read. I mean, it's... but, you know... And it doesn't tell as much of a story as you do in a handful of pages in a book like Clown or Blue Nemesis. And, you know, I don't think Steve is not giving you empty praise when he says that, you know, it's brilliant writing. It is. It's brilliant writing. And just keep doing what you're doing because I can't get enough of it.
I'm definitely glad to hear that. Yeah. I think, more than anything, it's the medium that I'm working with. Like I've done short stories and things like that have seen some light, but nothing like my comic work has been as paid attention to, and I think that's because I'm really visual. I love working in this particular medium. It has just everything that you could want as far as beautiful things to look at and marvelous things to read, and as far as like the writing goes of it, if you're not using every single panel, you know, even in a fight scene, you know, every single panel needs to have a mission. It needs to be able to convey at least five different things that, you know, that you want to get across to your reader as far as like what's going on in the setting. Are there dangers in the scene that, you know, will play a part five panels down the road? It's the most versatile storytelling that I can think of, and it's wonderful when it's done right.
So speaking of done, when will it be? Well, somebody's got to ask. I mean, you're going to get questions.
No. Here's the cool thing. I mean, there is a like I mentioned earlier. There's a legitimate reason why we had to put it on hiatus, and you know, and James and I both talked about and agreed upon why. You know, had these two publishers. Had either of the two publishers decided to pick it up, then we would have had something big to consider. I especially would have had something big to consider because it would have been a life changer as far as what my schedule is. You know, drawing comics is an absolute full-time job. It's not like you can do five comics a month drawing or four comics a month drawing. You've got to say, okay, this is now my life. I've got to draw this. Well, had either of the two publishers picked it up, it was going to be my dedication for the rest of my life to do that up until the time that they would eventually cancel it. I think this would have gone the route of Preacher. I think it would have gone like forever, you know, for a long time. So it that did not happen. But again, with that being said, we had to refigure our plan. Yeah. And again, now we are back to the original plan as of really today, as of when this interview is taking place, we're back to the original plan. Now with my existing plan, I have got a Pensacon this weekend. I've got another shop, signing. Then I've got seven shops in Europe that I'm going to be touring to. I'm going to be doing the London Super Show. When I get back, actually, from doing the tour of Europe, that's when I'm going to be right back to it. And that's going to be April. You know, it's going to be real soon. I'm going to be actually back to the pages. And what I talked to James about today, I cannot wait. I cannot wait to get back to this. It's like a happy home.
Yeah, because, I mean, quite frankly, it was one of those things where we were all set to go forward. We had done a handful of comic, you know, conventions, and we're handing out the preview title with the intention of, you know, here's what we got coming up, and you're going to love it. And I guess those preview copies got into, you know, some interesting hands. One I wasn't expecting and another that I kind of was. And they, you know, when they approached us, it was like, this is maybe just a bit of an opportunity that we have to at least see where it leads to, you know? So that's what Steve's kind of saying is that choice that we had to make, you know, that he's saying that we had to make, was to kind of give it an opportunity to see it go down a different road where we were going. The once again, the experience of that particular side of the fence was enough of a rewarding experience that I think it was definitely the right move.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, you know, like I said, I love when creative people get to be creative and control what their art, you know, and you guys are doing a fantastic job. So
I mean, just for me, you know, especially like once again, Steve's kind of had, he lives in this world, but for me, like I've never really dealt with, you know, bigger publishers, mm-hmm. And to kind of enter into that discourse of, okay, so where's it going? What do you see this, you know, happening here? We have a problem with this. How do you address it? You know, like those kind of back and forths are really kind of cool, because you get to analyze your own work in a way that you're not ready for. You know, you're ready, you know that something's coming at you, but you don't know exactly what it's going to be until it's right there on your screen and you're like, okay, I got to think quick.
Right.
So that in itself was really fun.
Cool.
And it taught me something. I learned something today.
and you know, from my point of view of all of this, and I've talked to James about before, you know, as we've talked about this whole thing, for me, it's not about, I mean, it I've been in this business long enough. It's not about the idea of just getting it out there and even knowing that it's fantastic. I know that there's a lot of stuff that's fantastic that gets out there that never sees the light of day because it didn't. Okay. It's about 20% putting this together. The other 80% is making sure that it has been pushed into the right people's hands to see. And if it doesn't happen, then business-wise, you don't make money from doing it. And I hate to even bring that up continually, but I do because, I don't work a full-time job and I'm doing this on the side, because as an artist illustrator, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You are completely enveloped in doing this, so you have to make that work. You know, I used to draw X-Men, I was drawing Batman, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to worry about the financial aspect. But when you're doing something you creatively own as well, co-own, you have to think in terms of that. And it's not about, you know, it's not as simple as if we just get it done, they will come. It's not. So we have been also doing a back and forth of thinking in terms of what will be the most successful way to get this in the hands of as many people as we can, and to be able to compensate so that we can afford to do the next chapter of it. If they like it, they will want us to do the next chapter of it, meaning, a.k.a., that we will make enough money to survive to do the next chapter.
Yeah.
So if that makes sense.
No, definitely. You know, I'm glad to hear you say that, too, because that's something that I don't think a lot of people understand, you know, that it's your job. You know, this is how you make your living. So, you know, it would be like someone coming up to me and saying, can you develop this software on the side just for the fun of it? And I'm never going to pay you, you know, like, no, that's.
Well, yeah, it's sort of like, I mean, like really like a 50-page graphic novel is really like saying to somebody, you know, 4 months worth of work, you know, if it were just work. Instead, like I said, it's something I totally believe in. It's totally amazing. It's awesome. You know, we're kicking our heads together on making this work. But I mean, it's 4 months for an artist, illustrator, to put this graphically together. You are working, if this were a film, as the director, the set designer, the mm-hmm. actors, you're the choreographer. You're doing all of that is what you're doing as just one, and you're doing it over like a 4 month period to really get it done right and just pencil and ink form. And, you know, so you want to make sure that it's that the plan is set forth, in, you know, to make sure that it gets to everybody it needs to get to, and the money would be there, and that's exactly what James and I had talked about, and in my opinion, we have a plan set forth for that. I mean, we really do, and again, it will get it to as many eyes that need to read this, as many people that would be interested in the subject matter that we've got, and for me that makes it a success. George Lucas did not look into doing Star Wars and saying, you know what, I want 10 people to see this movie because you know what, you know, it's just so good that I want 10 people to see it. No, he had intent. He had intent, right. and the idea and the plan that I believe in this story enough that I want millions to see this story. And that's what I feel you have to think of as a business person, which if you're not a business person as a writer and illustrator in comics, you need to be out of comics. You don't need to be in this industry. You don't need to think in terms of, I just want to do it and people will come, you know? So James and I have been able to work on that same basis, which has been phenomenal. He's amazing at thinking in terms of business. So again, you have to think in terms of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. And my hat's off to you guys that can do that too. You know, I work for people,
yeah.
You know, so, you know, one of the things too, when I read something like this, it goes through my head and, I have to ask this, you know, let's say 3 years down the road, this is the, you know, most successful independent comic of all time, which I hope it is. And someone wants to license it for a movie. A, would you guys want to be involved? And B, who would you picture playing some of the different characters?
Would I want to be involved, like as a script supervisor or something, you mean?
Or a creative consultant, however, you know.
No, not at all.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, I don't have to be part of it. I really don't. Yeah, I agree. Again, this comes down to the business aspect of how James and I think. We want it. I love the fact that we're in control of the format that we're in because, I mean, I fully believe in James and the script he's given me is flawless. It really is flawless. But, you know, when it comes down to, you know, a video game or a movie, let the people who are professional at that, making it work financially, let them be in control. Yeah. Let them do what they're best at. Mm-hmm. And see, that's what a lot of, you know, sometimes the fandom aspect doesn't understand, is that it's okay to relinquish control, and it's okay to change an aspect of Spider-Man's costume because it looks better on film than it does in the comic. Because it's a whole different format. It's a whole different medium. You know, so, yeah, I'm all for it, too. Let them do it.
Yeah, I've always kind of had that stance where if they want to make the movie of something that I've done, that's great. If it's good, then awesome. You know, it was based on a book that was good enough to be made into a movie, and the movie was great, awesome. And if it was bad, then the book was better.
<You know>? Exactly. Bravo. I love that. Exactly.
That's very simple. Simple, exactly. But effective.
So, like Steve's saying, there are people that are making that their life. I personally love to watch movies. But as far as like coming up with a way of making it, you know, there are just certain things that work better on film that I'm not privy to, maybe. Maybe if I had some practice, I could get privy to it. But for the most part, no, I'll stick to comics.
Okay. And how about, I asked the question because I think the character's name, Mara.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if she was modeled after a particular actress, I can't think of her name, from Battlestar Galactica, Trisha Heffler.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, she is.
Okay.
Yes, she is.
Nice.
Yeah. I typically like there was an artist named Al Williamson who was mm-hmm. very popular in the 1960s and 70s. He was the one that did the Empire Strikes Back adaptation. He did the Indiana Jones adaptations, Blade Runner, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would use some photo reference. He would put himself as photo reference in a shot so he can do the lighting effects. And that's how I learned that lighting effects were done by artists like Frank Frazetta and Wally Wood. And so I like to actually have somebody as a model that I have in mind for many of the characters. Sometimes it's me, and sometimes I actually just adjust. I mean, I'm a couple of the characters in there because I'm my most convenient model, mm-hmm. and I can turn me into many characters basically. But no, she was definitely after her, and yeah, I, again, it just, you know, I want to make sure Lighting to me in this story is so important as far as lending itself to the mood and the feeling of the story. It to me is always very important. When I was doing Batman, there was a Batman Confidential issue that I did that I made sure to light everything from Batman's flashlight. I did that on purpose because it really lent a very detective quality to me, to the story. It was not something that they told me to do. It was just something I thought would work out well. Well, it's the same thing with this story. You know, I feel that they are on emergency lighting. I want there to be this sense of urgency. And when they're outside, it's a whole different feel to the lighting. It's a whole different feel in general. So, I mean, again, you know, lighting is so essential, and you cannot light things without actually understanding structure, having an idea and a feel for who your model is for that particular character. You know, even if it's one photo, one picture, one idea for who that character looks like, you can model it from there as best you can, you know, utilizing your best knowledge. But there are characters that are modeled after certain people, and Battlestar Galactica comes into this play a lot. I can tell you that.
All right, I'll have to relook at it and see if I can figure out who else is in there.
There's one other from Battlestar Galactica. Just check it out and you'll see.
Because it's also the scene right after she gets back up after I don't want to reveal too much, the one image of her was like, yeah, that's definitely her. I just love that. Yeah, I love the fact that you talk about the lighting because it does play such a big part in the storytelling in this.
And by the way, anybody that's listening to this podcast, just to let you know, as we're talking and as we're doing this, I just posted an image of page 16 of the preview you guys have got done in gray tone, you know, that I produced. Mm-hmm. So it will, you know, if they friend me on Stephen B. Scott on Facebook, you know, they'll get a chance to check out what we're talking about with the gray tones. There is a scene that we are using for the cover right now. It's page 16 of the book, which is, mm-hmm. One of those ones that, again, in the trailer is the one that would tell everybody, this is what's going on. This is the psychology of what's behind what's going on here. So you know, again, friend me on Facebook at Stephen B. Scott and check it out. I will be the little icon image that comes up with the silly grin and the red skull cap with a spider on it.
Yes, actually, I'm glad you said that because we're at about an hour now. We'll wrap it up.
Tons of stuff we did not even talk about. When are you going to have him on here again? I've been holding back on all the other stuff while we've been going, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. There's this. Anyway, okay, well, go ahead.
Whenever you guys want to come on, you're two of the best guests we've ever had. I love talking to you guys.
Let James tell you about what he's got going on, and I'll tell you about mine.
Yes,
you,
that's what I was going to say.
Time? So. You got time? Okay, go ahead. Yes. All right.
Okay. Let's see. I've talked about the Dead. We're kicking through on that. We're releasing a page a week on its main website, which is thedeadcomic.net. But we've also got it up on Comixology. Issue 2 should be hitting here in a couple weeks, I'm hoping. The horror show, we got so much good, press from that particular book that we went ahead and decided to do a second, a follow-up issue, basically. So that will actually be coming up in the next month or two, I think, or month. Yeah, I'd say about a month. I'm currently releasing the work Clown on my personal website. Every Friday that will be coming out, and God, I've got a few books that I'm pitching around right now with a lot of different artists, and that's about as far as it goes. We'll be doing a Kickstarter for the Dead probably by the end of this month, and that will be to help fund the graphic novel, which is a 6-issue graphic novel. So keep an eye out for that, please.
And so everyone knows, James' website is jamesmaddox.net.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll post links.
Yes, we will.
Awesome.
How about you, Steve?
As far as me, guys, look, you know, I've got in about another 2 months, I've got work I've just done on Judge Dredd for IDW. It was actually one of my lifelong childhood fantasies to do work on Judge Dredd, and so I just recently fulfilled that one, you know, and so anyway, I'm very excited about that, and also I've got Pensacon. I'm a guest at Pensacon this weekend. I'm going to be also a signing guest on March 1st at 99 Issues in Mobile, Alabama, and I am also going to the London Super Show in London. That is going to be in the middle of March. From that point on, I'm going to be touring Europe with artist extraordinaires Mark Teixeira and Mike Grell. I'm going to be touring with those two guys. Yes, they've got to put up with me. It's going to be amazing. We're going to be touring France, Germany, and the Netherlands. And then from there, we're going to go back to London to catch Heathrow Airport to head back to the States. Now, once I get done with that, it's going to be, Gem City Con, and I believe, I just talked to a good friend of mine, I am going to be set up at C2E2. I'm going to be doing some artwork on the covers for Six Gun Gorilla. I'll be working on that. Later on this year, I've got work with P. Craig Russell, the adaptation of Neil Gaiman's The Graveyard Book. I am one of the artists that was chosen by P. Craig Russell to work on that. It's going to be coming out about August or September. I'm so looking forward to that as well. And I've got tons and tons of things going on. It's just going crazy. It's insane. But the most important thing I'm going to be working on when I get back from London, and well, actually from Gem City Con, is going to be Blue Nemesis.
Wow, you guys are busy.
We're insanely busy. Look, you're only busy if you're good. Am I right, James?
Yes.
The ones that are not busy, they're no good. Bad stuff.
And as Steven said, you can find him on Facebook, Stephen B. Scott, and he wants all of you to go friend him right now. So.
Everyone, hey, look, I'm at 2017 tonight. Let's get to 3,000.
Jeez, man.
Okay, I know. Okay, look, basically, everybody that listens to this show, go ahead and friend me. I don't care if you like me or not, just friend me. Look, I'm actually a nicer guy than I sound to be. So anyway, friend me tonight. Let's get me up to 3,000.
All right, that's the goal.
Yeah, let's get me up to like 600 or something. Oh, Steve, you got so many friends, man. I got friend envy.
Hey, well, you know, it's like I'm driving the Corvette. Am I making up for something? Wait a minute. Anyway. Anyway, guys, hey, I had a great time tonight, you guys.
Yes,
oh, so did we.
For having us on, man. It was very, very appreciated.
Oh, all right. So that'll do it for this week, everyone. So as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week. Speaking of capes, you can tug on ours by joining the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+ at Superhero Speak. If you have any comments on my bad jokes, you can email me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other channels. Or if you'd like to tease the beard of knowledge, you can email me at ben@superheroespeak.com.
We also occasionally rant about things on our website, superheroespeak.com. Or if you'd like to further discuss the prowess of Rainbow Dash versus anybody in the greater geek universe, you can email me at john@superheroespeak.com.
And don't forget to check out our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. companion show, Agents of Speak, which you can watch live most Tuesdays around 9 p.m. on our Google+ page or archived on our YouTube channel. Now let go of our cape.